Let's turn back again to the book of Esther, page 442 in the church Bibles, and that will take you to Esther chapter 1. I'm not going to be preaching through any particular chapter or verses of Esther, but ranging across the whole book, because we're not going to be looking at one verse or one part, but at one character within Esther. Now, Esther is an amazing book. It's amazing in its luxurious oriental setting. You were supposed to be amazed as you read chapter 1 at just how rich and luxurious it is. It's an amazing book in its tension. Here are God's people, the Jews, and I'm going to presume a little knowledge of the book, but if you didn't know, they are later in the book under threat of being wiped out. Will they be wiped out or not? The book keeps up this tension nearly all the way through. It's an amazing book for its drama. It contains great one-liners like, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." It's even got humour in it. We were supposed to be gently amused as we heard the king's advisor say, "If you don't do this, all women in the country will disrespect their husbands. But if you get rid of your wife, all women in the country will respect their husbands." And we're supposed to think how stupid and think it's gently humorous. It's a book that's amazing in all sorts of ways. But what is the most amazing thing about this book? I reckon it's this. God is not mentioned. Not once. The word God never appears in the book of Esther. The name of the Lord never appears in the book of Esther. No one talks about God in this book. No one prays to God. At least we're not told they're praying to God. There are no miracles. There's no prophets. There are no visions. God seems totally absent. He has been purposely written out of the book of Esther. Places where it would seem obvious to mention him, he's just silenced. God not there. And yet this evening, we're going to do a character study of a character in Esther, and that character is God. Because of course he is there, because it's all about him. It's a remarkable account of God's work. Now, of course, all the Bible is a remarkable account of God's work, but Esther is so in a particular way we especially need in 21st century UK. It's an account of God's work with something special about it that is relevant to Coventry and England in 2015. And I want us to see that now. You will be helped a little if you have some knowledge of what happens in the book. But if you don't worry, I will try to fill you in as we go along. There might be some gaps. And I hope it encourages you to read the book. Do you read the Bible in big chunks? I hope you read individual verses and meditate on them. But I hope you also read big chunks. And the book of Esther, I reckon if you read it with any understanding, you'll find it hard not to read in a big chunk, because it's hard to stop before the end and put it down. So let's first of all see this, God at work, the story of Esther. God at work, the story of Esther. Esther is this, as I've said, dramatic story. It's full of unusual events. They seem like coincidences. Without these coincidences, God's people, the Jews, would be wiped out. But it's actually God at work behind the scenes. Let's trace through some of the storyline and see that. And so chapter 1, which was read to us, chapter 1 seems to be an out-of-control chapter. There is an out-of-control king. He's drunk and he makes an outrageous demand that his beautiful queen comes in so that all the men can stare at her in her beauty. There are even suggestions that when it says wearing her crown, it means wearing just her crown. But whether that's true or not, especially in Eastern society, outrageous demand. An out-of-control king. There's also an out-of-control queen. Now, we might sympathise highly with that queen, but we're also supposed to see an out-of-control queen, because she will not do what her husband says. She will not do what her king says. It's an out-of-control chapter. And yet, God is in control. What's he doing? He knows there's going to be an assault on his people. He's making room for Esther, his woman, who is going to come to the rescue. Because he knows and he's in control. And so we move on to chapter 2. and the king's strange advisors. This king, by the way, isn't really in control. All the way through the book of Esther, we find he just does what other people say. He's not really in control. This king, he has this plan, he's told. Get a group of women together, young, beautiful women, and choose yourself a new queen. And so he has a harem of girls from which to choose his new queen, once he's got rid of the old one. Historians say this harem would have been anywhere from 400 to 1,400 young women. What a mad, degrading and immoral system, wasn't it? 400 to 1,400 women. And out of all of those women, this one, Esther, is chosen. How come her? Why her? Ah, because God's in control and he's got a plan to rescue his people. But chapter 2 has more than Esther. It has a man, an obscure man, an unknown man called Mordecai. He just happens to sit at the king's gate. He just happens to hear a plot. He just happens to be the guardian of the newly appointed queen and so has a route into the palace. And God just happens to be working out everything exactly rightly, because this is going to prove essential in the rescue of the Jews, God's people. But we haven't yet seen how it is that the Jews, God's people, were in trouble and why they were going to be wiped out. And so we move into chapter 3 and we're introduced to the ultimate baddie. Now, do you like your baddies to be, it's nice and easy, isn't it, when they're unremittingly bad and you don't have to question, is this the bad guy in the film or is he not? This one, it's easy. Haman is the ultimate bad guy. And there's this man, Mordecai, will not bow to Haman, and Haman is enraged. But it's not good enough to kill Mordecai because he won't bow. No, Haman says, I must wipe out all his people. Who are his people? Surprise, surprise, the Jews, God's people. And so, chapter 4, Mordecai goes into action to try to stop this. But how can Mordecai do it? He's a nobody. Are you saying? His niece is the queen. Yes, but even the queen can't just walk into the king's presence and say, hey, there's a problem, get it reversed. No, not even the queen can do that in that society. Chapter 4, verse 11, if you turn forward to that. Chapter 4, verse 11, Esther says, all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law. Put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. In other words, I can't just breeze in there and the king seems to have gone off me. He's probably found a younger woman he's more interested in. And so, like almost every chapter in Esther, chapter 4 ends on a cliffhanger. Can Esther do anything about it? And so we have chapter 5, verse 2. So it was, when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. Phew, you say, that was lucky. He held out the scepter. No, it wasn't luck. God is in control. And although God is not mentioned, you have the nearest you get to a hint of it in Esther, because back at the end of the chapter, Esther has said, get the people together and fast. I'm going to fast, my people are going to fast, Mordecai, I get your people together and fast. And in the Old Testament, what always goes with fasting? Praying. Interesting, in Esther, they wipe out that there's praying because God is being purposely written out. But you've got a hint. This is no luck. This is God in control. But of course, that hasn't solved the problem, has it? Because Haman is still enraged. And chapter 5 ends with, he has determined that the very next morning, he's going to go and ask the king to hang Mordecai. And if it was a TV serial, the credits would roll, wouldn't they? And you can't wait till the next week to find out what's going to happen. And this is what happens, chapter 6. That night, the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. A bit of gentle humour, read him the history of the Persians, and that's going to send him off to sleep. But it doesn't really work. It doesn't send him off to sleep. Instead, he finds out there was an assassination plot, and a man called Mordecai, he showed it up. Now, has Mordecai been rewarded? The king has had such a sleepless night that it's now morning. And the king says, what should we do to reward him? I can hear someone outside. Who is it? Oh, it's Haman. Send him in and we'll ask him. But the king does not say to Haman, what shall we do for Mordecai? The king says to Haman, what shall we do for the one the king delights to honor? And Haman thinks, and who would the king delight to honor more than Mr. Haman, more than me? And so we find Haman ends up parading Mordecai through the streets, saying, here is the man the king would delight to honor. It's delicious, isn't it? And it's the turning point in the book. Everything turns around that end of chapter 6. And it hinges on a string of so-called coincidences. It just happens that the king couldn't sleep that night. And Haman just happens to enter at that point. And the king just happens to phrase his question in a way that opens it up for Haman to get it hilariously wrong. And there are more after chapter 6, but that's enough, isn't it, to show you here is God in control. You can be in no doubt in the book of Esther, God's in control, and he doesn't just work in broad brushstrokes. It's the details. It's the minutiae. He's got it all under control. God at work, the storyline of Esther. But let's secondly see God unseen, the special place of Esther. God unseen is the special place of Esther. Because the whole Bible is telling us God's in control, isn't it? From start to finish, you know, I hope you read your Old Testaments and you read all your Bible and you find you're reading a lot of history and a lot of it is reinforcing to you again and again, God is in control. So what extra does Esther give us? How does it give us anything new? Well, it gives us something new in this way. It's God in control when he's unseen. It's one of three histories that stand out for showing us that God's in control. Do you know the story of Joseph at the end of Genesis? There's this boy sold as a slave, ends up in prison in Egypt. Is God at work? He's hardly mentioned. Oh, yes. He's getting Joseph into position to save Abraham's family so they wouldn't all starve. Hardly mentioned, but God in control. Do you know that lovely little book of Ruth? There is this immigrant, and she is in a country she's unknown, she's looked down on, and she's finding it hard to get by. Lovely little story. What's it doing in God's word? Ah, it's all about God in control. Because he's paving the way for his king, David. But he's hardly mentioned. It's all so homely. There are no prophets, there are no miracles, there are no visions, nothing like that in Esther. But God's there. So Esther is just the extreme version of this. Because here the details are more finely tuned. And God is not even mentioned. Seems he's purposely written out. There's the special contribution of Esther. I'd call it this. God is unseen, yet forever at hand. That's what it's all about. God is unseen, yet forever at hand. He's forever at hand to fulfill his plan and to keep his covenant. Do you know what a covenant is? They're like the backbone of the Bible. God's special promises. God's binding agreements. There's a family called the family of Abraham. And through them, God's going to bring blessing to all the world. But disaster, there's a famine and they're all going to die. No, they're not. God's at work to get Joseph to Egypt so that his covenant will continue and there would be blessing. God's got a plan. He's going to bring a king called Jesus, but there's no royal family. How's that going to work? Ah, he brings a woman called Ruth to Israel, and from her comes King David, and eventually King Jesus. But disaster, none of that is worthwhile now because Haman's about to wipe out all these Jews. So is it all going to go wrong? Ah, no, because there's God at work. He's not going to let his plan fail. He's not going to let his promises be broken. Mordecai knew that if you have a look at the end of chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 13. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Would you like to be on the receiving end of those words? It's a bit of pressure, isn't it? He's pushing her, but he also knows this. Look, God has a plan. God has a covenant, and he will not let it fail. Whatever you do, but why not have a part in it? He knew God was unseen, yet forever at hand. So we've had God at work, that's the story of Esther. God unseen, that is the special place of Esther. But now let's spend more time in this. God today, what's he doing today? That is the application of Esther. God today. Now, I don't know most people here, and maybe there's an unbeliever here tonight, and you think to yourself, as many do, yeah, you expect me to believe, but if God is there, why doesn't he show himself? If all that you say is true, if there is a God that I should know and that I answer to, why does he seem so absent from my life? Well, the book of Esther has a message for you, if you're not a believer. Because God didn't show himself in Esther. God was well and truly hidden in Esther. But he was at work. He was at work saving people. Saving a people who were destined for destruction. God was not seen, but he saved through a man who could be seen. Because I reckon the book of Esther should really be called Mordecai, because he's the key figure. Saving through a man, Mordecai, that they could see. And that is a picture for you. It's a picture and a pointer to a greater saving work God was going to do and has now done. You don't see God in your life, maybe? But he is at work, and he's saving people. And he's saving people destined for destruction. Does that include you? And he's saving through a man who has been seen, Jesus. Oh, people saw him alive, and people saw him die. And people saw him back alive again, risen from the dead, and he wrote it down. And there it is, historical records. You can read in black and white, verified, tested across the time of history. Oh, people have tried to test them to destruction, but they've never managed to test to destruction those accounts of the man they could see, Jesus Christ. The one you should believe and the one you need to save you. What if you are a believer? What does Esther have to say to you today? Why is it we've got another book in the Bible telling us that God's in control? You know, you can read Genesis and find that out. You can read Exodus and find that out. You can read Leviticus and on we could go. They all tell us God's in control. Why do we need it again? Why do we get told so often? Well, I don't know about you. Well, I think I do know about you because I think we're all basically the same. Don't we so often believe it in theory but doubt it in practice? Don't we so often tick the box, yes, I believe that doctrine, God is in control. But you hit things in life and you doubt it in practice. Let me give you some examples that fit the book of Esther. What about when we're in places and situations that seem nothing to do with God? Most of your life isn't spent in this building, I presume. It's spent in places and situations, and it seems God, well, keep him out of the workplace. Maybe you're even told that. Keep him out of the school. Keep him in the privacy of the home and church. God seems to be written out of most of our society, doesn't he? And increasingly we're told he must be written out of the public sphere. Well, God seems written out of Esther, literally. They were in Persia, they're far from Israel, they're far from the temple, they're far from the priests, there are no prophets around, but God's in control, and he is in control in your workplace, And in your home, maybe you're in a home where you're the only Christian and it seems God is far from it, but God's in control. And in your school, and in your university, and in your student halls. There he is. He's in control. Are you trusting and obeying him there? I had a funny experience once when I was travelling on the London Underground. And as I travelled, I was listening on an MP3 player to some preaching. And it was a weird experience. Every so often I checked that other people around me couldn't hear the preaching. Because it was preaching, I can't remember what the sermon was, but I was listening to something from God's word about God. I was getting messages about God in my ears, while through my eyes I was getting messages that God's absent because I was in an environment where, well, what I was hearing would be totally unacceptable. In a society where God is pushed out. It was as if I was experiencing two worlds that don't overlap. But the book of Esther says to us, but they do overlap. Your workplace tomorrow, or wherever you are, and what we're hearing tonight, do overlap. Because God is in control even there. We sometimes tick it off in theory, don't we? God's in control, but doubt it in practice when? When it feels like God's promises are irrelevant. Do you ever, maybe you wouldn't admit it here, but do you ever feel that God's promises might feel irrelevant? Oh yes, we're promised Jesus is returning. We're promised we've got an inheritance. We're going to be with him. We're going to be made like him. But are there times that just seems so distant? And it seems very theoretical. Because the children are fighting, and work is a daily grind, and you've got a job that you wish you weren't in, or you just, your body is weak and you're weary. And you might say, oh, it's all very well for people in Bible times. It was all miracles and prophets and covenants, but not now. It all seems so distant and irrelevant. Well, think of the people in Esther. The people in Esther were hundreds of miles from Jerusalem. They were 1,400 years after the covenant with Abraham. That's 1,400. What was 1,400 years ago? Isn't that 600 AD? Have I done my sums right? 600 AD. Who here feels well connected with 600 AD? It's a long time ago, isn't it? These people in Esther had not seen a miracle, they'd not heard a prophet, but God's promises saved their lives. God's promises saved their lives. Oh, his promises aren't distant, remote, and theoretical. He's still in control when it all seems so distant from you. Here's another time. Sometimes we tick the box, God's in control, but we doubt it in practice when you seem to get no help about what to do. Now, you may get no word from God saying, apply for that job, not that one. You know, I'm not doubting God can do that, but he doesn't normally, does he, give you a word saying, that's the job, apply for that one. Does it mean God's unconcerned? No, of course not. Did God give Esther a word saying, go into the king, he will extend his scepter, and I've got it all planned? She got no word, did she? She said, tell Mordecai to fast, I'm going to do it, and if I perish, I perish. In other words, she didn't know. She got no word from God. He was silent to her, but far from unconcerned. Oh no, he was right there in it, working out his plan. We tick the box, God is in control in theory, but we doubt it in practice when the details of your life seem too unimportant to be a part of God's plan. Doesn't that, do you ever think that? Look at how the details of what Esther did were part of God's plan for his people. Everything, the tiniest detail here in this book matters. God has a plan to make you like Christ, his son. God has a plan to take you to be with him. God has a plan to use you for his glory. He has that for every one of his children. A couple of weeks ago, I had the sad honor of burying a 19-year-old boy who we'd just seen God work remarkably in his life. And it was lovely to be able to say to his parents, it's tragic he's died so young, but it's not a waste. Because God has a plan for everyone made in his image, let alone those who've turned to him and become his children. And that plan doesn't get missed. He had a plan to use Danny, that 19-year-old boy, to his glory. And he did remarkably. And he's a plan to use you for his glory. Even in the details and the little things. 95% of life is mundane, isn't it? 95% of life is too important, is too unimportant to be worth mentioning on Facebook. It doesn't seem to stop most people, does it? But God has a plan that includes making you like Christ in the 95%. His plan isn't just for the 5% of big things, because that's not most of life. His plan is for the little mundane, daily, how you react to others tomorrow type things. We can be tempted, can't we, to doubt God's in control when you feel, well, God is actively involved with and he's providing for the missionaries and the Christian bigwigs, but not me. Who am I? Little, obscure me. Oh, yes, I read the biographies. I've heard of someone called John Calvin and a missionary called Gladys Aylward. I can see, yes, in their lives they mattered, but not me. And he said before he read from Esther chapter 1, most of the Jews had gone back to Jerusalem. Some were staying here in the capital of Persia. The ones in Jerusalem looked down on the ones in Persia. They were the compromisers. They'd not gone back to Jerusalem. Fancy not going back to the city of God. Oh no, we're the ones with the temple and the priests there. Who are they? They're just people who are worldly, aren't they? They'd rather stay in the big city. They were far away from the spiritual elite. But the book of Esther is telling us about God's care still for them. Don't just accept in theory God's in control of your life. Believe it in the details tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday and carry on believing it. He's in control. One last lesson, God today. What does Esther tell us? It's a lesson for the church. The people of Esther saw no miracles. The people of Esther heard no prophets. They were far from the temple. And can you imagine? I can imagine them saying this. It's not like the good old days, is it? It's not like the good old days. God's not at work anymore. He used to be at work, but now, not like the good old days. And the book of Esther says, yes, he was at work still then. Now, I know you've seen great blessing as a church here, and the church has grown, but I hope you are not unaware of or unconcerned for the national situation of the church. And if we're honest, it's poor, isn't it? And it's weak. And churches generally do not see hundreds flocking in, and they do not see many saved, and we are in a bad way. And our temptation, I don't know about here, but many people's temptation is to say, it's not like the good old days, is it? God's not at work. God's abandoned us. But God is still at work, and he is still in control. Yes, we must pray. I hope you do pray that God would revive his work. Our situation should concern us deeply. We should be urgent in prayer to see more. But we must not go around in misery. It's not like the good old days, as if God is no longer in control, as if he is not working out his plan. Yes, it's good to hear, to read about those wonderful revivals and high points in the history of the church and long for them, but it's not good to have such a narrow view of when God works and when he doesn't that we dismiss anything other than our model of a revival and a valid work of God as it's not like the good old days. God was working wonderfully in Esther, but he was totally unnoticed. It shouldn't really surprise us, should it? Because do you remember what Jesus said the work of God's kingdom would be like? Do you remember he used a picture of what the kingdom and its growth would be like? He said, God's kingdom is going to grow like yeast in bread. Now, I haven't made a loaf of bread since I was a child, so I don't know much about it. But I'm pretty confident of this. Yeast in a loaf doesn't go bang and suddenly expand, does it? It's gradual. It's quiet, it's hardly noticed, but it does grow. And that's the sort of thing that God does when growing his kingdom. Yes, pray for more, pray for quicker, pray for better. But don't despise what God's doing today. He's still here, he's still in control, he's still got his plan. Well, what's the message of Esther all about? It's reassuring us, it's building our confidence in this. A sovereign protector I have, unseen yet forever at hand, unchangeably faithful to save, almighty to rule and command.